Hey, happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you happen to be.
Happy Saturday to
this
you.
This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. Beth Guckenberger, along with Rob Hall. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. Good morning.
How's things going with you?
You know, it's going pretty
good. It's Saturday.
Good.
I mean, how can it not be good? It's a Saturday.
It's a Saturday, which means JV football games. And it
you're
means,
into that, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, welcome to the United States. As we said before, you're knee-deep. Now you're going to varsity games on Friday night and JV games
people
on
people have these cool bleacher
on
seats
Saturday,
and they have spirit wear.
Pee-wee games on Sundays.
Thermoses with all kinds of things in them.
I mean, buttons with their kids' pictures on them.
Welcome to the US of A.
That's
I'm learning all the cheers.
You know what we haven't done in a while, and I feel bad as sort of the, I don't know what you'd call me, the host here or something.
Yes, you are.
What have you been doing? Like, you're going places. Like, we need to give a quick Beth Guckenberger plug. What are you doing these days?
Oh, lots of speaking. I've been all over the place since we talked last.
You did a NASCAR event.
I did a NASCAR event. I have the privilege a couple times a year to speak at some NASCAR travels. And I've told you before, we had those guys on the air. I love the sport now, but it's not like I love the sport for the sake of the sport. I really like paying attention to which people I care about are in which cars and how fast they're taking a left turn. I mean, I just am. I always tell them, if you all were fishermen, I'd be all excited about fishing, but because you're race car drivers, I care about, you know, all the things that I wouldn't have even known the little vocabulary.
I saw your picture. Was it on your Facebook or something? You and Justin Allgaier, or maybe that was on Back to Back's Facebook page or something.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Justin Allgaier is one of the Nationwide racers, and he's been to Mexico a bunch of times. He has a heart for the Lord. He and his wife Ashley just love Jesus and use the platform of racing in order to share it. And so it was crazy because we went, you know, like the drivers, they have a whole day of laps and meetings and all kinds of stuff, you know. And
do they call that time trials or?
Qualifying. Okay, so then
nice.
It's time to officially, like, line up two by two and then go off, you know, into the sunset. And so as they're waiting for that process and for the NASCAR folks to come check everything out before everybody gets the green light to go, they're just hanging out outside their cars, just standing and, you know, talking to each other. And the ESPN walks up and down and does their gig, you know.
Right.
And that's where the chaplains walk up and down that row and just talk to them. They're the last people they talk to before they, you know, kiss their wives and get in the car, their girlfriends or whoever. And it was a tremendous privilege to get to pray with them. At one point, I was praying with Trevor Bain, and ESPN had their camera, like, you know, 4 inches from my cheek. And he said, say it well and say it clear because other people are listening. And it just to recognize that they were going to put their life really in risk as they go that fast around, and then the last thing they want to do is ask Jesus for prayers of protection. It was really great.
It was cool to see Lonnie Klaus kind of in his element, and you walking up and down and doing your thing with him. So
yeah,
very good stuff.
It was really, I mean, I got to take two of my sons, and they don't usually think, like, the events I do are all that exciting.
Yeah.
They tend to
sit in the
back row.
Like the women's retreats you do or the
yeah, not so
conferences
much.
That you do or
they're
whatever.
Like,
they're like,
people
come
up and talk to them afterwards. Right. Unless I give them a cut of the book table, they don't usually want to come.
Right.
And so
NASCAR is pretty cool for
they
them.
They were like, wow, Mom, this is very cool.
You are cooler than we thought, Mom.
That's exactly about
yes.
That was their summation of the day. Wow, you're cooler than we thought.
Hey, before I forget, man, again, I don't know where we get these guests, but Lynn Austin is going to be on our show in just a minute. Lynn Austin, she's written a new book called Pilgrimage. If you are into Christian fiction, you know Lynn Austin.
Definitely.
And she's sold over a bazillion million books.
Exactly.
So she's going to be on the show. This is not a fiction book. This is actually kind of a memoir of her journey to Israel and sort of what it revealed to her about her Christian faith. And then Sally Bakke is going to be on. She's a Christian comedian and has written a book as well.
What didn't
kill me made me funny.
I like that.
So that's an interesting show.
Do you like to watch YouTube videos of funny people like Tim Hawkins and Brian Regan?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If I need a good laugh or something, you know, you pop that up. Isn't that amazing? You just like, oh. It hasn't been that long. I mean, it hasn't been that long ago to be like, I guess I remember that. That was kind of funny.
Uh-huh.
Now you can just like.
You don't have to try to retell it.
Hit a couple of buttons and bam, you're there.
I know. Man, that Brian Regan, I think he is hilarious. We should have him on the show sometime. But he
is so funny.
He has a, a whole routine about airplane travel, and I do lots of travel. Like
right.
you were just mentioning, I'm getting ready to go to Abilene, Texas, to spend some time there with the folks. And I cannot get in a security line without thinking about some of his jokes
yes.
or walk past the folks in first class. And so anyway, if you have your mobile phone with you after our show, I encourage you to look up Brian Regan. I don't have any idea what his faith life is like, but he's pretty funny.
He is very funny, and he's clean.
And he's clean.
That's what I appreciate about him. He's whether he's a believer or not, I have no idea, but it is kid-friendly.
It is kid-friendly.
Yes, so.
I like that very much. So, yeah, I just got to speak in, where was I last week? Louisville, Kentucky, and then hopefully we'll get some opportunities to speak here coming up on Orphan Sunday, November 3rd. We'll be talking about that as it gets closer, but if your church is interested in orphan care and orphan causes, I would encourage you to find a way that day to recognize the 163 million children around the world who do not live with their parents. And I'm going to get a chance that day to get to speak at a couple different places, and I'm looking forward to it.
We might even be able to send them a film.
Very exciting. Listener exclusive.
Listener exclusive, yes. The documentary film, One in 163 Million, will be debuting here in Cincinnati at a special premiere. But if you're interested in showing the film at your place, we can arrange that as well. It is beyond all expectations of how cool I thought it would be. It just started out really as a way to connect some people who were filmmakers to back-to-back, and what has come out of that, this film, One in 163 Million. We had Brian Stege on probably a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go on iTunes and look for that show with Brian Stege, he can tell you a lot more about the film. But the trailer is out. You can go to One in 163 Million. It's a Facebook page. You can go to 163million.com, or you can visit backtoback.org, and you can hit up the trailer there, and I guarantee it will be moving to you, and you'll be like, hey, we might want to show this film on Orphan Sunday. So thanks for that plug. That wasn't even in the notes.
I'm so glad that you got that plug.
That's a good thing.
I'm very excited about it. Okay, speaking of mobile phones and looking up videos and things that are very strange while you're waiting in line and at the stoplight and anywhere else.
They could watch the trailer on right now
if
they
wanted
to.
Okay, well, that wasn't strange. I was going
Come
to
on.
Highlight that strange picture you sent me the other day of, like, that guy with his nose on his forehead.
Yeah.
Tell them. That's like a little
Total
disturbing.
Shift in gears.
I'm just saying, mobile phone.
Yeah,
just,
if you want to Google something.
That's in my brain.
You can hit up man who grew nose on his face or something
Aww.
Like that. I came across this story a couple of weeks ago, and it's the story of a guy who he got some bacteria or something in his nose, and it was causing his nose to basically deteriorate.
Oh, gosh. Like
so
flesh-eating disease.
Yes. So I'm not kidding you.
Gosh.
Doctors grew a nose on his forehead.
Mm.
They took some skin, grafted it onto his forehead, and there's a picture of them.
Let's think of a way to make this spiritual. God made the human body so incredible.
Yes. That you could grow a nose on your forehead somehow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then eventually they're going to cut it off his forehead.
And this is not a story. This is
made up.
It's
not going to smell out of his nose, forehead, right?
No,
they're going to take it off?
Let's finish that thought. Yes, they're going to then, it's now almost fully grown. And so they're going to remove it from his forehead and place it back where it should go on his nose. And so all the stuff that causes your nose to work, you know, all the smelly stuff.
Yeah,
olfactory, nice. All of that stuff is more up inside your nose. And so,
or the sinus cavities.
Thank you. Wow, Dr. Beth today. So they're going to put this nose that they've been growing on his forehead back on his face, and it'll work.
It's kind of like Mr. Potato Head, don't you think?
Oh, my God.
The nose.
No, I hadn't thought of that. But
okay, that's,
a good visual.
Okay, thanks. That's kind of what it feels like to me. I remember biology L104, there was like this urban legend we were investigating whether your nose and ears never stop growing, because you hear that, your nose and ears. And I got some uncles that could, you know, verify
that. There's also a story,
theory.
There's a link in that story about someone who grew an ear like on their arm or something and put it back on their head. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, it leads to all kinds of questions, like, you know.
God's design for the human body.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds
We can
of,
do all things.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Anyway, go
Happy
Google that
Saturday
if you're standing
morning.
In line right now. Go ahead. Waiting for your kid to get out of practice. Go ahead, Google man who grew a nose.
But then come
forehead.
Back to us in 60 seconds.
That's exactly right, because Lynn Austin is going to be with us talking about her new book, Pilgrimage, and you won't want to miss that. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
The This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through back-to-back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the back-to-back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a great Saturday wherever you happen to be out there listening right now. And, you know, sometimes I doing this show, Beth, you get to talk to people like that you hear about or people talk about and, like, you know, people that I wouldn't normally ever get the chance to hang out with. And this is one of those.
Yes.
One of those. I mean, I have to say, confess, I'm not a reader of Lynn Austin very much. I mean, she writes, you know, historic fiction, more romantic, and I'm sorry, I have to confess that. But almost every woman, especially that I know that reads Christian fiction, oh my gosh, they're like, and so this is one of those days I'll get to now tell these people, hey, guess what?
I spoke
to Lynn Austin. So she's got a new book out. It's not fiction. It's called Pilgrimage, My Journey to Deeper Faith in the Land Where Jesus Walked. Is more like a memoir, and we'll get to hear exactly how she put this together and all those things. So, Lynn, thanks so much for being on the show with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's great to be there.
Well, thank you,
Lynn. I have traveled to Israel, and I always say it was the moment, not to be cliche, that I was born again. You know, when I it had really nothing to do with the geography fully. It was just being in a place where the teaching came alive to me, and biblical stories which I'd known for decades became real to me in a way that it still resonates with me on a daily basis. There's not a day that goes by I don't think back on that experience, and it's been several years now.
It is life-changing.
It is. So tell me what caused you. You know, you write fiction. You are very successful, a Christie Award-winning best-selling author, to kind of shift gears and let us in on your thought life as you recorded those experiences in Pilgrimage. What was the impetus for that?
Well, I didn't actually decide to write nonfiction. I was perfectly happy writing fiction. But I was going through a time of real spiritual dryness and a lot of changes in my life. And it just so happened that we were taking a trip to Israel during this time. And so I decided to let God really speak to me on the trip and to really seek Him out on the journey. And I began to write a journal of all the lessons He was teaching me. And it wasn't until a year or more later that as I was going over my journal and seeing what I wrote, I began to think, well, I wonder if someone else who's going through the same experience I had could benefit from this. And it seemed like, especially during the recession, there were so many people that I talked with where change was the new order of the day in their lives. And I thought, you know, I had learned so much on this journey, and that maybe my musings could help someone else. So it kind of came about, you know, unexpectedly, that I never intended to share my journal musings with the world. But I thought, you know, God helped me so much on that trip. If I can just help one other person along the way, then it's worth it all.
Tell us a little bit about what readers can expect. You've had such a strong voice in fiction, and people who read your work know that it's your work from that voice. This is a different kind of book. What can the reader expect from the experience of reading through it?
Well, I think it's probably similar to other works that are called memoirs, although it's the memoir of this particular journey, not my whole life, but I do bring in stories from my life. But it also follows sort of the arc that I write when I do write fiction, because in fiction, usually the main character starts off in trouble or there's some sort of change in their life, and then as the author, I throw a whole bunch of obstacles in their path, and, you know, throughout the course of the novel, the main character's trying to solve all these problems you throw at them, and hopefully finding God as their helper somewhere along the way. So in that sense, this journey followed that arc that's true for all of our lives. We don't really think to turn to God until things start falling apart and all the wheels start coming off the cart. And then, you know, that's usually when we start turning to God. So in that sense, I'm charting my own journey through change, much as I would a main character, except I don't get to make it up.
Right.
All the things that happen in real life.
Have you, since your first trips to Israel, and I know that you volunteered there for a whole month on an archaeological dig, and have you found that some of those, some of that geography and those life lessons have found their way into some of your fiction books?
Yeah, the reason I went on the archaeological dig was for the first series, first books I ever wrote, which was the Chronicles of the Kings, which I take three kings from the Old Testament and retell their stories. So I was going there originally to find out about biblical backgrounds and what everyday life was like in the Bible times on the dig, and also the geography of Israel. And then it found its way into another novel I wrote called Wings of Refuge, which is about a woman who goes to Israel on an archaeological dig. So I used some of my experiences from that in that story. And then the series I'm writing now, I've returned to biblical fiction. So I had a chance to go back to Israel again to research the biblical books of Ezra and Nehemiah. So, all the geography, the life lessons, the Bible just sort of, you've probably experienced this if you've been to Israel, the Bible just sort of comes alive in 3D. Mm-hmm. And then when you're reading about Jesus on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, you can picture it. You know, it's like those pop-up books for children.
Right.
It just comes right at you, and you can see the sheep on the hillside and, you know, olive trees. You know what an olive tree looks like. Just amazing.
Well, I know that, you know, as you've mentioned, you've been there several times and, you know, sort of researching historical places and people for your fiction, but I guess it wouldn't be a stretch to say, and this time you kind of ended up researching yourself.
Exactly.
Was there something most surprising to you is that you discovered about yourself when you were on this particular trip?
I think what I discovered about myself was I do not like change. And when change is thrown at me, I balk. But what I've discovered, and it's, of course, it's right there. Everywhere you go in Israel, there's change. I mean, you're seeing these ruins, that go back centuries and centuries, and how the whole cities and the landscape and everything has changed. And I began to see that change is God's template. That's how He gets us to move forward. Otherwise, we'll just stay in our own little ruts forever. And so I kind of stopped fighting it, and thought, all right, if change is the way that God moves us forward and moves history forward and moves His people forward, then when all these changes that come in my life, I shouldn't fight them. I should say, all right, God, where are we going this time? You know, where do you want to take me? Because I'm perfectly happy in my own little rut, you know, just doing the same thing every day. And there have been a lot of shaking since that trip. When I finished the book, I didn't quite know where God was going to take me next. Writing a nonfiction book was a new journey for me. It's been amazing to see in the meantime that once I embraced change and stopped fighting it, that, you know, all the good things that came about.
Yeah. We're talking with Lynn Austin, best-selling author, best known for her works of fiction, but we're talking about her new book, Pilgrimage, my journey to a deeper faith in the land where Jesus walked.
Do you have, Lynn, a favorite place that just represents to you some of the change and some of the embracing of biblical truth, a favorite? It could be a geographic place or even a spot where God spoke to you.
Yeah, you know, he spoke to me in so many places, which was really neat. But I think the one that I keep coming back to, and I even have a picture above my desk now, is the wall. We call it the Western Wall. The Israelis call it the Kotel, which means wall. And it's all that's left of their temple. I mean, Solomon built this magnificent temple, and then, you know, the exiles rebuilt the temple, and King Herod, of course, made it into this extravaganza, and it's gone. There's nothing left but this fragment of a wall, and it isn't even a wall of the building itself, of the temple. It's just like a retaining wall around the mountain. And yet the Jews will go there, and people from all nations and all you know, Christians as well, go there to pray. And it's like, represents to me, I mean, enormous change, you know. I mean, the Israelis themselves had to adjust to the loss of their temple twice. And, you know, for centuries they weren't even allowed to pray at this fragment of a wall. But you go there, and there's such a joyful atmosphere. And you see this cross-section of people from all walks of life, Israeli soldiers and old men and women and young people with little babies, and they're all going to the wall, and some are weeping as they pray. Some are celebrating. We were there during a bar mitzvah celebration, and everybody was clapping and singing, and there was music. And it's like this is all that's left of their worship system, and yet they're still rejoicing and praising God. And to me, that speaks louder than, you know, anything, that you can endure this centuries of change and still, but God doesn't change, that he's unchanging, and he's with us forever, and he promises that.
When you, at least for me, when I got back from Israel, people were like, okay, well, maybe I'm interested in going, but I don't know, who do I go with, or how do I go there? If I want to look up things on the internet or books, or what do you do? I mean, certainly your readers are going to read your experience and then have their own hunger for their understanding of ancient times and the biblical land. Where do you point readers to get more information on the things that have captivated your heart?
There are a lot of good, like a lot of churches will put together a tour group, and I can give you the names of some, like our tour guide on this tour is a, he's Jewish, because all by law all the tour guides have to be Jewish, but this particular one was a believer in Jesus. He was a Messianic Jew, and he put together, you know, a teaching tour, so that for what we wanted to learn. This particular time when we went, my husband teaches at a Christian college, and this was a group of students and who were going on an interim trip to Israel. So we put together a package, you know, that would speak to the students, but it ended up speaking to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I know, you know, like I think Moody Bible Institute puts together a nice tour. The Ray Vanderlaan is a Christian leader from Michigan who puts together a wonderful tour. There's also a group there called Sharesh, which means roots, and they put together teaching tours for schools and colleges to go. So yeah, you know, there are a lot of different good leaders, and usually they'll put together the kind of tour you want. If you want a lot of hiking, if you want, you know, mostly to see religious sites or whatever, they're very accommodating. And I would also add that the time we went, it was during the Gaza war, and yet we felt perfectly safe. We
yeah,
did not
that's
ever feeling like we were in any danger.
That's definitely key. Well, Lynn, thank you so much for being with us. A really personal work pilgrimage, and we're so, so glad that you decided to join us and share it with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Lynn Austin, best-selling author about her new book, Pilgrimage, My Journey to a Deeper Faith in the Land Where Jesus Walked. Hey, we're definitely going to switch gears after the break. Sally Bakke is going to be with us. What Didn't Kill Me Made Me Funny. So we're going to maybe have a few laughs or something when we get back. Hey, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We hope you're having a great Saturday, and we'll see you back here in just a couple minutes.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care, at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Hi, I'm Fred Dreyer for Alpha Flex with Omega 5. When it comes to joint pain and inflammation, I'm an expert. I played 13 years in the National Football League. I've been hit and run over by the best of them. So when I have a flare-up, I don't want a painkiller. I want a solution. I've been taking Alpha Flex with Omega 5 for a long time now, and I'd be lost without it. It's powerful and natural, so don't settle for over-the-counter or prescription painkillers. Get Alpha Flex with Omega 5. It's the solution to pain and inflammation. Go to alphaflex.com right now and enter promo code DRYER. Order now and get free shipping and handling. And you can buy your first bottle at 50% off. That's 50% off, half the price. That's alphaflex.com. And don't forget to enter promo code DRYER, D-R-Y-E-R, for your 50% discount.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Hey, happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you happen to be. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Morning, Beth.
Good morning, Rob. I like that wherever they happen to be, because they might have moved from the start of the show. It's a whole hour show.
That's right.
They happen to have been at home now. They happen to be on their way to a soccer game, or they happen to have gotten, you know, on an airplane, could have even changed locations. Wherever you happen to be, we wish you a very happy fall Saturday.
I say this in the most respectful way I can, but you're one of the strangest people that I know.
That's not very nice of you.
No, I mean in very good ways.
I don't think you mean that way.
I do mean it. Just
listeners, if somebody told you that you are very strange, would you take that in a happy way?
And
the Facebook lines are going crazy.
Maybe strange is a bad word.
I
needed to have a better
choice.
Word choice. You're very unique. You're very, one of the most unique people.
Yeah, that still sounds
Is that
a
better?
Bit veiled.
No, unique is good.
It's moving on the spectrum.
All right, whatever. We need to move on. All right. Hey, great segment with Lynn Austin, just our last segment, you know, to have a best-selling author on, very personal. And
you know I like talking about Israel.
Absolutely.
The idea that it's applicable today in the seasons of
absolutely.
Change.
We're going to go to the totally other end of the spectrum.
I like that about Real Life with Beth and Rob.
That's right. Sally Bakke is joining us. She's got a new book called What Didn't Kill Me Made Me Funny. And she's hilarious.
She is hilarious.
She's hilarious. She's done a lot of stuff. She's performed in small groups, large groups, groups up to 5,000 people. She's open for Chanda Pierce, who calls herself the Queen of Clean, and Josh Blue. And she's been everywhere. And basically what she does is she makes people laugh.
I like that about her.
And who doesn't need that?
I'm not me. I want it.
Absolutely. So, Sally, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. And I would be offended too, Beth. I think strange is not the way to describe it.
It wasn't a great word. I should have said something.
It's a good thing the man is already married, because that is nobody's idea of a pickup line,
you
right?
You knew what I'm...
not very nice there.
You're awesome. Right. Awesome.
Thank you. Sally, well, I just wanted to introduce our listeners to you and give them an idea a little bit about your ministry and about your story. So for those that aren't familiar with you, would you tell us a little bit about how you got into comedy and how you are able to use that to draw others into a relationship with Christ?
Well, I got into comedy quite by accident. Apparently, I've always been funny, which is similar to being called strange, you know, because there's funny ha-ha and there's funny, like, something's
strange.
Wrong with you.
Yeah.
Funny, and so I never was quite sure how to take that when people would say that. But I have always, I guess, just kind of looked at things a little differently. And so when I perceive something and whatever happens in my brain, it comes out. And people find that funny. So one day, actually, our church, oh, wow, this was years ago, maybe 18 years ago, my church was having a chili comedy night, and I had nothing prepared. I had actually just come from working at the pediatrician's office where I did phone triage, and I walked in the back of the sanctuary, and there's about 300-400 people in there, and the guy up front says, oh, you're funny. Come on up here. And I was like, are you serious? So I got up and I did 20 minutes off the top of my head. And the next day, someone called and hired me to come do their Christmas business dinner. And that was my first paid gig, if you will. And I basically just talk about my life. It's kind of pathetic, really, because I just get up, I look around, I watch what happens, I talk about it, and people pay me. So that's really what it is.
And, like, do the people in your family mind being the subject of many of your, you know, illustrations?
No, they don't, actually. Actually, they love it. They come home. My kids used to come home, and when I would say, oh, I'm going to go speak at a MOPS group today, or I'm going to go for the weekend and talk at Hearts at Home or whatever, and they'd always come home and go, what did you say about me? Did they laugh? Did they think it was funny? And, you know, if it's something sensitive, I do ask permission. You know, I really try to be respectful of them, particularly when it comes to my husband, who is a source of great humor to me, but he's also my best friend. He's our leader. He's amazing. And he actually, speaking of my book, he edited my book. So he knows every word that's in there, upwards and backwards. And so he loves it. He's very proud of that. So, no, they actually get a kick out of it.
I think I have this deal with my kids, since I do public speaking, that anytime I mention them on the stage, I have to give them $10. I'm thinking you might actually be in debt if you had to
yes.
pay your family for every time you mention them on the stage.
Well, family is funny. I mean, there's times when, you know, you put this bunch of people, and yes, we're related, but we're all really different, and you put us all in a house, and we live together, and we create a life together, and there's times when it's just darn funny, and I think that's really just what I talk about, yet they know that I love them more than anything, and it helps us get along, and actually, the fact that we laugh together so much really is just the glue that holds us together. We're just really tight, and I think that's a big part of it.
So what made you get to be an author? I mean, it's one thing to be on stage, tell funny stories. It's another thing to go through the whole writing process and have people edit. And so Did you always want to be an author, or what drove you to writing a book?
I like drove me to it, sort of like insanity. That's sort of
the same
thing. That drives
most authors I know are relatively insane.
Yes, well, you know,
again, strange and insane. He's insulting us. I just want you to know you got roped.
I know,
into
insane,
that.
Strange. It just goes on and on. I'll talk to you later. But but I really, it's funny that you had asked that because I never set out to be an author. When I was looking at speaking and growing my speaking career, everyone said, "Oh, well, what is your title of your book?" And I said, "I don't have a title of my book. I just talk, you know." And they said, "Oh no, you really have to have a book." And I said, "Well, that's kind of like, you know, if you're an Olympic gymnast, do you have to sew leotards too?" I mean, I didn't really understand the connection, except that people want to be able to have something to take with them that is part of you. So when I set out to start writing the book, I basically struggled with it so much because the way I speak on stage, to your point, it's very different to get up and speak on stage and then put it on a paper in written word, and I sound a lot like Yoda when I would write it down, you know. Love them, I did. Help you, I will. I speak very disjointedly sometimes, and on stage it's okay because I'm making a facial expression or something else works with that, but it's much harder to put it on the page. So it took me about 3.5 years to do it, and a lot of people giving me a lot of great input as to how I could really find my voice on the stage and put it onto the page.
Do you have something that you thought to yourself, I just make sure I want to include that particular story in the book, like something that you just knew right off the bat you wanted to start with?
Oh, gosh, there's lots of stories. But I definitely love the story about how I met my husband, or how I basically, you know, not met my husband, but he an incident where he took me to the airport. And we were just prayer partners at the time. We were not dating. Actually, I just didn't think he was, you know, all that special, to be honest.
Kind of strange and insane.
Yeah
strange and insane. And he wore short shorts and had a little mustache and tube socks up to his thighs. You know, he was that kind of, he's a real rocket scientist. He's smarter than anything, and he just really didn't, you know, he put all his energy into his studies, so I'm going to put it that way. And so I asked him for a ride to the airport, and he offered a ride, but halfway through he basically sneezed and rolled down the window and kind of spit out the window, and the rest of the story is in the book. I'm not going to spoil that for you, but it's just, it was life-changing, I'll just put it that way, for me. So
well, how intriguing is that? Some guy that's about to be my husband that I don't think is all that intriguing sneezes, and the rest is history.
Well, it wasn't just your average sneeze, and what he did with it wasn't an average, you know, an average scenario either.
Yes.
It certainly wasn't first date material. Let me put it that way. So,
well, I know when people sit down to write a book, they have a particular audience in mind, or an outcome in mind, or some type of influence in mind. So when we come back from the break, I would love to hear sort of what it is that you want your readers to take away from this book, or kind of the goal that you had in mind. Can you join us after the break and do that?
Well, if you say nice things and call me nice names, I'll
yeah, I think he has to compliment us three times. I might have to you to say three nice things for every mean thing he said. So
I'm way in the hole with Beth already. I mean, that'll take me 2 or 3 weeks to
just
think of.
Just saying.
Yeah,
well,
plan accordingly. I'll be back.
Yes, good.
One of the questions I'm going to have for you, Sally, after the break, so just consider this warning, is, like, what happens if you don't feel very funny and you have, like, a stage presentation you have to give, and then, like, you got to, like, you know, work yourself up? So, for me, you know.
That's a good question. I'd like to know that, too.
I think that all the time. Like, what if, like, something sad just happened to you and you got to, like, compartmentalize that? How does that exactly happen? I mean.
Wow, you just rattled off like 58,000 questions there. That was pretty good.
We have questions for me, if I'm about to get on stage and I'm feeling tired, I drink a Diet Coke, you know, maybe taking a little dark chocolate, and then I got all the...
But you don't have to conjure up funny.
Not, I mean, it just is natural. Just kidding. Yes, you're right. Yes. I don't have to... It's not the expectation.
That's exactly
right. But absolutely, that must feel like a little bit of pressure, I would imagine, on someone like Sally, that when she's been brought into somewhere to warm up a crowd, or to soften a crowd, or to give the non-Christians who are visiting kind of a gateway into our conversations.
I mean, yeah. That's pressure.
Pressure.
Pressure. Well, Sally's going to join us after the break. I know that Beth and I will be here after the break.
Let's hope she's still on the line.
We're hoping that everybody else will come back right after this break. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll see you in 60 seconds.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a great Saturday wherever you happen to be.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Hey, we're talking with Sally Bakke about her new book, What Didn't Kill Me Made Me Funny.
And right before the break, I was giving her a little advance warning to prepare her answer to my question. What happens when you have, a gig you have to do, a show you have to do, and you're not feeling very funny? Or you sit down to write a chapter in your funny book and you're not feeling very funny that day? That must have delayed, the book a little.
Well, it does, and the fact, I think writing is worse, and the fact that, you could be at home, and a lot of my energy and my funny comes from engaging with other people. Mm-hmm. So on the days when I'm at home, and I really took writing as a job, so I would do that in the morning because I have something else I do in the afternoon for a job. So I basically had to plan my time, and for me, just if I'm sitting around the house, it's not very funny. I love to interact with other people. So that's where I get a lot of my energy. So sometimes what I might do would be call my friends or watch something funny on YouTube that would give me just a little bit of a boost to get my mind rolling. And then that helps. And, of course, coffee helps with that, too. So I just kind of tried to get in that mode. So I really enjoyed that. And a lot of times I would go out to write. I would take my laptop to a restaurant, and I had, in fact, one place in particular where a waitress would always make me laugh, and we would talk, and so that would kind of get me into the mojo. But you're right. Things happen. I was asked, Beth, to speak. Of course, people plan your speaking engagements far in advance, and I had 3 to do in the day after 9/11. That was difficult. And, some people are like, should we cancel? Should we not? But you know what? I think the laughter was so therapeutic. And, of course, there's nothing that you can make fun of with that. But real life is still funny even in the midst of tragedy. In fact, that's what my book really talks about, how I believe God gave us laughter to help soothe over some of the disappointments in life, some of the wounds, some of the friction. And it can be such a great therapeutic tool, not only within your own heart, but within your family and within your friends. And I think it's a great stress reliever for that. So as much as, it can be tough when you start into it, but really once you get the ball rolling, I think it just, it goes from there. It's a wonderful tool. I would die without laughter. I really would.
Well, and it kind of leads, I think, to the question that I posed before the break is, what is it that you're hoping the goal of the book or that the reader will experience as a result of reading? And it does sound like that laughter is an important part of life.
I think it is. I really feel sad when I see people who don't engage in laughter. Research talks about how children laugh like up to 300 times a day, and then as we get older, many people laugh... They've said like 11 times a day. Well, I know people who that might be their monthly total, actually. But I really think that it's such a positive activity for us to do, not only physically, and there's some very good hard science to back that up, not just physiologically, and I'm an RN, so it really, I really love the research part of that, and I actually talk a lot about that in a CD set called Have You Had Your Vitamin Glee Today? And I love to speak on that topic, especially to parents, because laughter is something we forget to do in the day-to-day of life, but it's such a soothing part of life and can be, especially in the area of mental health and being able to just be able to see life in a little bit lighter way. That doesn't mean we take everything ha-ha and you have to be a comedian and funny and yuck-yuck. It's not that type of thing when I say laughter. I just mean to look at the look at the positive, look at the joy, look at the blessings, look at the mirth. And there's funny things around us everywhere. We just have to look for them.
Yeah. Well, I know you're a very busy woman, so where can people find out where you're going to be? Where can they find out about the book? Where can we direct people to know you?
Wow, that is a great question. Oh, and you know, you did ask me what I hope people get out of it, and I'm sorry I didn't address that more clearly. I get so excited about the use of humor within a family unit, particularly in terms of parents. But I really hope people get out of my book, which you can find on my Facebook page. You can look me up under Sally Bauke, Baucke, and you can find a link to it there. Also on my webpage, which is funnygalsal.com, just like it sounds. And you can also Google me, and you'll find more than a zillion ways to connect with me. I would love to connect with people. That's my favorite thing to do, to connect with my listeners, readers, and my audiences. I just really love to interact with people. So you can go to any of those sites to find my book, and my hope of that book and all of my messages, to be totally honest, is that people feel, first of all, the ability to laugh, especially within the church, especially in this busy life that we have, that we can take a moment to do that because it's good for us, but also that they come away with a message of hope. My book really is a book that anyone can read. And I think of my main audience as women 18 to 60, but I really have been amazed at how many men love the book. In fact, one of my best reviews on Amazon.com, which is where you can find the book both in softcover and Kindle, has been from a man who just was blown away by it. That's actually how he started his comment. And just how people can take anything away from that message, that we're not alone, that we're loved by a huge God, and that laughter is a great way to get through the disappointments in life. So that's what I hope they take away from it, and I really hope they connect. I would love to hear from your listeners.
Absolutely. We are so glad that you found some time to be on the show, and that the book is out, and people can find it at Amazon and all those other places that you listed. Nothing but the best to you.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Thanks, Sally.
It was such a strange experience.
Okay.
In the best possible way.
Thanks, Sally. Blessings to you.
Same to you. Thanks.
All right.
Bye,
see ya.
Sally.
Okay. Enough about it. A bad word choice. What can I say?
You have lots of more episodes to redeem yourself. But.
Yes, and I'm sure it'll come up many times.
Okay. I'm struck by, I just tweeted out that statistic. She said that children
laugh
300 times a day and adults 11 times a day. I mean, we got to be more childlike. I mean, I think we should just inspire ourselves to be more humorous, just so we can add to the count of our listeners for today.
Yeah, and just think, if the average is 11 times a day, there's plenty of people that are below the average.
I know, that makes
me
so sad.
Zero or one or something.
They didn't laugh at all. And she's not saying that we have to like be looking at jokes or YouTube videos, just finding irony, humor. I mean, heavens, even the cheap laugh of a sarcastic comment, which I hate sarcasm, but
just laugh a little bit.
Crooked smile is better than none at all.
It does say something about kids, doesn't it? Because they usually are more, they're more carefree, and they find they're more observant. They find little things funny. And,
yes, I want that.
Even things that aren't funny, they laugh at.
I think Jesus kind of knew that when he told us to enter the kingdom of heaven like a child. You know?
Yeah, maybe.
I think he was saying, laugh all the way in through the pearly gates. That's what I think he was saying.
There you go. Sounds like the beginnings of some type of a talk for you.
I think I'm gonna have to ponder that for a minute. I do think, again, that these two women are both good communicators who are deciding, I could keep all my communication skills, my writing skills, my story of what God did in the Holy Land through my story of change. I could, all of that I could keep to myself, just using my little circle of friends. But I get so proud of women who decide to put themselves out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, a comedian, oh my heavens, like she's out there saying a joke and you know right away if people liked you or not. You know, like I can give a talk and they could be like mentally making their grocery list and I don't know, they look engaged to me, so I just keep plowing through. But how intimidating to think somebody liked or didn't like. It's such a, and humor is so subjective. What you think is funny, I definitely won't. I hate that dumb TV show, The Office. Everybody in the whole wide world thinks that thing is funny. And I think, you know, like, that's subjective. And so that's vulnerable. I just am sad for
that. You know, the other part of that, we have a saying around school sometimes that the hardest job is to be the music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is they're the only people who get judged in front of 1,000 parents,
mm-hmm.
right? They stand out there and they've been working with kids for however long. And guess what? We're going to put on a concert now for all of you to watch. Well, the science teacher doesn't have to do that. I mean, they'd, right? So to be out in front of people and just put yourself out there and say, hey, how did I do?
Mm-hmm.
Whew, scary.
I know, it is scary. So both for Lynn and for Sally, there is a level of vulnerability. And, you know, I've mm-hmm. mentioned this many times, but the Midi Bible president, Paul Nyquist, that we interviewed several months ago now, talked about the role of vulnerability in the church today and how critical it is in order for us to engage those who don't understand our ways. And I think those women are being vulnerable, and I like that. I'm just calling it out.
Now, I know that you... love to talk about Israel, and so Lynn was on. She was talking about Israel. Do you have a favorite place?
I do.
What is your favorite place?
In the country of Israel?
Yes.
Okay. Oh heavens! You might have stumped the stumper.
Oh yes, that's a good thing.
I remember having a visceral reaction to the steps where they believe Peter was on the day of Pentecost, where they know they, you know. Not, I don't want to say legend has it, but certainly tradition holds
tradition, better
that
word,
this
yes.
this is the place where the Holy Spirit and the tongues of fire happened. And I just was like, this is where you, the Holy Spirit, decided to put your holy finger down and touch this earth. And I'm standing right here and come and bathe me in all of your glory. And I just was, everyone was all sitting tired because we'd hiked all the way there.
Yes.
Not me. I was jumping up and down in my boots on my tiptoes like, this is it, this is it, this is it. And I loved that idea.
Yeah, and the reason we talk, I would love for everybody to have an opportunity to make a trip, you know. And when Lynn was on and talking about being in the Sea of Galilee and you know how small it is, mm-hmm. and how that's where Jesus spent most of his life, within just a couple miles of you know where he grew up, so anyway, you know, we love to tell stories about it. We could tell stories every time we're on the air. But I hope it's as inspiring to people to say, you know, what I know about the Lord, what I know about Scripture could be amplified by taking a trip. And so I couldn't encourage it more.
I couldn't either. And do not go on those trips that just go to the Holy Land places. Like, you know, those places look like zoos now, and they're not nearly as meaningful as you'd think they'd be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get out and get in the land.
Absolutely. Hey, if you loved this show, and why wouldn't you have?
I mean,
come on, I did, absolutely.
We had a comedian.
That's right, and a best-selling author. That's right. So if you like this show and you want to pass it on.
We talked about noses growing on foreheads.
Gamut on this. So if you like this show or any of our other shows, you can visit us at reallifewithbethandrob.com. You can visit us on Facebook. You can download us from iTunes. We'd love for you to share what you've heard with other people. Right? So, hey, we had a great day. Hope you're having a great day. And we'll be back here the same time next week. So until then, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. Have a great week.